to Dear Hank and John.
Or as we like to think of it, Dear Tangents and Hank.
It's a podcast where two brothers and sometimes four friends answer your questions, give you dubious advice, and bring you all the week's news from both Mars and AFC Wimbledon. Hi, everybody. I recently got a pumpkin, but it was broken. So I had to go get a pumpkin patch.
Oh, God.
Mm-hmm. Was that your joke?
Yeah.
Your official joke of the episode?
The official joke of the episode. Because it's Halloween-y time.
It started off as like an interesting story. I wanted to know how you buy a broken pumpkin.
So SciShow Tangents is our podcast where we talk about science things and we try to amaze each other with science facts and also beat each other in getting science-related points.
Hank Bucks.
With stupid Hank Bucks.
Stupid Hank. Well, I mean, how are you doing? Are you still in last place?
Yes.
Yeah.
So the people who join me on SciShow Tangents are Sari Riley.
Hello.
What's your tagline?
I want a Pokemon shirt.
Oh, that's a great tagline. It tells everybody everything they need to know about you.
Yeah, including my not middle-aged man age range.
Sari is in charge of like all editorial at Crash Course. We're also joined by Sam Schultz.
Hello. I'm a producer, a special projects producer, I believe is what I would be called.
Oh,
I gave myself a promotion just now.
You're not a producer of any of the channels since SciShow Kids ended.
At Tangents, I am, though.
But
is that a channel?
Well, it's not a YouTube channel. You take on all of our like unique projects like Tangents.
I'm Black Ops.
Black Ops.
Is that your tagline?
Yeah.
Special Forces, Sam Schultz. And Stefan Chin is also here.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Pretty good. Just had a lovely weekend out in the wilderness. We brought back so much bread.
And Stefan is a producer of SciShow.
Yeah, I, you know, make spreadsheets and stuff.
And also videos.
Oh, yeah, I do that occasionally.
At Dear Hank and John, we get a number of different kinds of questions. And we have questions sometimes that are science questions. People just like hit us with, and I'm like, I love it. I'll answer your science
questions. Are they trying to get you to help them do their homework or something?
Ooh. I think that they're just having interesting thoughts about the universe.
Okay.
I like to give them the benefit of the doubt.
Okay.
So we have front-loaded this episode with some science questions, but we also have some normal questions. So we'll maybe more than average will be our science questions. Mm-hmm. But also we want to take on and help our listeners with various
And I can't things. Talk about science anymore. I'm sick of it.
That's too bad, because we're recording an episode tomorrow.
I know, but I need a break.
Well, then this is it. It's your palate cleanser. So we're going to have our first question. It comes from Steph, who asks, Dear Hank and Tangents, when I step in a puddle of mud and a bunch of microbes end up on the back of my legs, and then I go and I have a shower to wash them off, did I just send all those microbes for the ride of their lives? Do they even notice, or are they probably still chilling on the back of my legs somewhere? Suddenly concerned for the microcosmos, Steph.
I am very interested to know, like, what the experience of acceleration and, like, G-forces is at the microscopic level.
Microscopic organisms they can sense things, but mostly they sense things that are useful to them. Well, entirely. We all sense things that are useful to us.
Yeah.
There are some that can detect gravity. They can tell up from down so that they can move within, but that's pretty unusual. Mostly what they can detect is oxygen concentration and light, because those are the things that are necessary for their metabolism.
So they don't really care if they're like swirling around in the like this. I think about the ocean, like those molecules are just sloshing all over all the time. Like,
but they're not really aware of that in the way that like a human sloshing around in the ocean is.
So it's just like a really quickly changing environment.
It's more like this changed, thus do this, and that's a direct link. There's no like thought in between. Obviously, like microbes don't think the way that like a plant will turn. Turn to face the sun is like, this is over here, and then there's sort of a direct molecular mechanism that tells them to do the next thing.
So in the mud puddle, presumably they're mud puddle loving microbes.
Yeah.
They're happy there. They got their nutrients. Then when they splash on the back of your leg, you have different chemicals on the back of their leg, and that can either be like, wow, what happened here? It's too...
I don't like this at all.
I don't like this. I'm going to try to move away and like, then they squirm and do whatever, chemotaxis.
Chemotaxis is moving through a chemical gradient. So, I sense that there's more oxygen here than there was here, so I'll move that way. And they keep moving. And that's sort of like why microbes move, is that they're traveling down chemical gradients.
Mm-hmm.
There's also this idea that we're all doing that. We are just constantly all sort of traveling through a chemical gradient of our own brain chemistry. And that we don't actually make very many decisions on our own.
I feel that. If you, like, track every minute of your week and you do that week to week, like a disgusting percentage of the things that you do are just like the same things that you do every week.
Why
like, there's not a lot of new.
Yeah, well, no, I like showers.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, showers
I like
are good.
Food eating. I love
sleep.
Recording of Dear Hank and John.
Yeah, but it's like, how much of this am I choosing?
Right. No. Well, definitely. Have you seen my calendar? I don't design that thing.
So calendars are just chemicals.
Yeah.
Is capitalism a chemical? I feel like that's making you do a lot of things.
It's quite
a question. Do a lot of the things.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's the societal soup.
Yeah, like capitalism is sort of our societal soup that we have to sort of function inside of. It's okay. Our physical property.
I'd rather just get washed down the dang drain.
A little bit of a tangential question, but do you intentionally wash the back of your leg?
No.
Yes.
I don't usually.
Yeah, I don't.
That's
I like
a once a week.
I probably haven't washed my like calves.
Yeah,
that's like half of your.
But like, what's the water gets down there?
It's soapy water too.
Yeah,
like there are a few key areas.
It has to go past your butt first.
Yeah.
Well,
and it's like the runoff of the dirt and the grease from your hair and stuff going down the rest of your body.
It needs its own special attention for sure.
Just take a washcloth and do the top to bottom.
Do you wash your feet?
Yeah, I wash my feet because they have a dirtiness
odor.
To them.
Yeah.
Like I can tell they're dirty. Okay. Whereas my calves, like no matter what I do to them, they're always just
they
like chilling.
Fine.
It's not like I can sniff my calves and be like, oh, whoa, boy, my calves.
What about your knee pit? You wash your knee pit?
Not really.
Oh, it's boy. Fine. You guys' knee pits are probably stanky.
Yeah, but you're never going to come into contact with my knee pit.
Oh, yeah, I guess you're right. But
someone might.
Somebody is going to.
If you like are next to a child, that the height of your knee and you're wearing shorts, they could smell that knee pit.
I want them to have a slightly negative experience so that they learn not to grab my knee pit.
I'm helping. This is something you need to know. I mean, sometimes I do it and I'm like, oh, that's nice. No one ever touches me there.
So, well, thanks for answering that question for me.
Dear Hank and Tangents.
No, other way around.
Dear Tangents and Hank? Oh, okay. Dear Tangents and Hank, what happens when an astronaut sneezes in space? Do they fly across the room like in cartoons? And if the sneeze occurred in the International Space Station, how would they clean up the sneezed out fluid that is floating in the air? Not Krista, Krista.
This is a great question.
That's good to know. I mean, equal and opposite reaction. If stuff's flying out, it pushes you backwards.
Yeah.
Does this fluid float in the space station like as little droplets?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, this seems like this is the reason they don't want bread in the space station. Like, there are crumbs. There are little particles that end up in the air and then that gets behind your panels and then there's mold and stuff back there and then you can't clean it out. And,
there's filters and then the more you have to change the filters, the more work it is, the more maintenance there is. But I think that like specifically for stuff like sneezing and you know, various other reasons there might be droplets in space. There are systems to take care of the droplets.
Like
one, I think
bag.
That you try to sneeze into something that will absorb it.
Yeah.
But two, the filters do this for the stuff that doesn't get caught. And then also there are devices for capturing liquids that are traveling around, like a little vacuum cleaner to be like, suck that up.
You're waving your hand around and I imagine the butterfly net.
Scooping up the bugs.
Yeah. You know, for when you accidentally just pee.
That probably happens.
Gotta suck that up.
No.
Yeah, if you're an astronaut.
Do you accidentally just pee?
No, if you're in space, though, sometimes you might be like, uh-oh. Might float out. I don't know.
Because it's harder to hold it in?
I don't know. You might think about how scary it is to be in space.
You look out the window and you're like, oh, Jesus, I peed a little. That's terrifying.
If you sneezed and didn't cover your mouth, would you fly backwards? But if you sneezed and Dracula'd, you wouldn't fly backwards?
Because not all of it would be captured. But yes, if it flew, you would get pushed back. And then when the energy hit your hand, it would push you forward. And so cancel each other out. If you were able to capture all of the
sneeze energy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Could also be useful if you get like stuck
in the
middle.
Stuck
in
the middle.
Then you just whip out a little emergency pepper packet and like douse yourself.
Genius.
Do any of you stop your sneezes? I like pinch my nose.
I used to do that. But now I feel like I trained myself to sneeze more through my mouth than my nose because I was doing that. And I feel like that's bad and I'm going to die one day.
What?
Like sneezes go at like 100 miles an hour. I'm going to like try to redirect it.
Your
and it's
whole nose
blow
is
going
to pop
face
off.
Out. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that if like holding in your sneezes killed you, we would hear about that more.
Mm-hmm. I would be dead.
Dear Tangents and Hank,
Why do we have toes? I understand fingers, but why toes? They seem very odd. I can't even move them individually like I can my fingers. What do they do? Please help. Fingers and toes, Cambria.
Why do? I mean, I like fingers are pretty understandable. They're super useful.
Yeah, yeah. We don't consciously use our toes much.
I do.
I'm sure we unconsciously are using them to balance all the time. Yeah, right? Maybe.
That's sort of my thinking, but Hank seems to consciously use his
toes. I use my toes consciously all the time.
Do you pick up stuff with your toes?
I pick stuff up with my toes.
I do too.
Bending over is hard for me because my hamstrings are very tight.
Well, I don't feel like I have good toe dexterity, but also when it feels like, oh, bending over is hard, I'm like, I should make a point to bend over then so that I'm
right.
Like,
oh, interesting. That's a good point. I should bend over more.
Use it or lose
sometimes
it.
I'm holding a child in one arm and ooh, he's dropped his toy on the ground and he's crying and I just pick it up with my toe.
Does the fact that we can't move all of them individually for the most part mean that we're like evolving them to not be there anymore? Or
I think that they are useful, and I think that there's definitely a side to side thing happening. Yeah. So the big toe and the pinky toe and sort of the end toes, they do independent things and need to do independent
right.
things. So you wouldn't want like just a flipper out there.
But maybe
right.
we could evolve like a dino foot.
Three
like
toes.
Just two or three toes. That's
yeah,
all
we need.
Yeah,
but when you got like a simple body plan, this is like a Hox gene thing where like there are these special genes that do layout. And it's better to just sort of rely on the same ones that say like, okay, there's going to be five things and we're going to do it on this side and mm-hmm. down on the bottom too. And
these work well enough.
Yeah. It might be better to have fewer toes, but it's even better to not have to like mess with mm-hmm. the sort of body plan mm-hmm. more, mm-hmm. which is why we end up with, you know, all vertebrates on land having the same body plan.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Head on the top, two arms, two legs. It's wild.
The bones in your hands and toes are called phalanges, which
yeah.
I remember
yeah.
from AP Bio. And it's just a fun word.
Great word.
You got a bunch of phalanges.
Hands are amazing.
I like mine them. Quite a bit.
Yeah. Sometimes you look at them and you're like, what beautiful, delicate, perfect little machines. And also, when you look too hard, you're like, ew.
All right. Dear Tangents and Hank, I am 71 years old, and even though I have lots of nice clothing, I have a low interest in dressing up. I generally just wear t-shirts, blue jeans, and a sweatshirt. But when you get old and you don't dress well, people try to give you money on the street. I enjoy the invisibility of old age and maintain that I could wear fuzzy pink slippers and no one would notice. My wife, on the other hand, always looks her best and dresses up very nicely. When we go out together, it's a mismatch. She never says anything, but I sense that it bothers her. Should I join the 12-step group? What does
Eric,
that mean?
That was a big, I feel like you don't need a 12-step group to look nice sometimes.
No, but maybe each of the steps is like learning how to wear a new piece of clothing.
Right, like this is a kind of 12-step group that is not the traditional kind.
Start with the socks and then go up from there.
How many do I have 12 pieces of clothing?
No way.
Sock, shoe.
Oh, if you count
one sock at a time.
Yeah, okay. One sock at a time, because that could be a fashion choice.
But then you throw in a watch and a couple rings,
yeah.
you can get up to
pants. Can I count my shoelaces? Are they clothes?
Oh, maybe. If you use them as an accessory,
yeah.
I would count a shoelace mm-hmm. if you count a watch.
Boom, shoelaces too.
I would count your glasses too.
Glasses
as
are also
one,
clothes.
Those are the advanced steps at the end.
Yeah,
but that's like part of the 12.
Right, when you're thinking about customization, that's where all the like hidden numbers come in.
Yeah, and also like it's not just about clothes, it's also about appearance, so you could be like,
oh, like tattoos.
Moose tattoos.
Oh, moose tattoos.
Oh, like hair.
I thought that was one item.
moose tattoo.
You know.
Eric, you need to get a moose tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, not that this is what the question was. What do we think about getting a tattoo in our 70s?
Great.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah.
In my 30s, I'm like, I have so long to go that like I might regret this.
Yeah.
But by the 70s, like I'll have it all figured out and then I'll know what I want.
Yeah.
Or if it's a mistake, there's
just
not that
matter.
Much longer.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like you start regretting it in your 80s and you're like, well, and I regret a lot of things at this point.
Yeah. The moose tattoo was the lesser of the things that I've done in my life.
I think in your 70s, too, you can figure out where the moose tattoo will look the best.
Ooh.
So like where your skin is still the most taut. Maybe it like, I don't know, like work with your wrinkles to make
like a full chest moose tattoo.
Probably.
Full chest moose tattoo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That sounds expensive.
Well.
Eric, I completely understand going low effort on clothes.
So I like this question because I am very specific about the clothes that I wear just because I like to be comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm the type of person who will buy new clothes, probably like Eric, where I will I have a bunch of clothes that I go out and I'm like, the day I buy them, I'm like, oh, this is cool. I'm going to wear this all the time. But then I wear it a couple of times and it's like, this isn't very comfortable. I'm just going to wear the same outfit that I wear every day of my life. Mm-hmm. But Rachel, my fiance, she dresses extremely nicely and she has a million different outfits and like three closets full of clothes. And she's always trying to get me to dress better. And she buys me stuff sometimes. And I have to wear that because I get yelled at if I don't. So I think my advice is to let your wife buy you some clothes.
Oh.
But also be sure that she buys you stuff you like, because that's something we fought about all the time, was like she would buy me crazy stuff,
mm-hmm.
or like sweaters that were just too loud for me.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually I had to negotiate, like,
yeah.
I'll wear this pattern, but it has to be blue.
Yeah.
A little bit of compromise on both ends.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe every once in a while you dress up.
But maybe she's not saying anything about it. It's fine.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing wrong with being comfy every day of the week. But also, there's nothing wrong with being comfy 4 days of the week and then, like, making an effort and going out to dinner one night.
And you can look good and be comfy, too, I think.
Yeah, these pants are a little tight. This next question comes from Casey, who asks, Dear Hank and Tangents, my stepfather was watching a documentary on Mars and all of the Mars rovers, and he was wondering why no one uses drones on Mars. Any help would be appreciated. Space drones and rovers, Casey. Well, I have great news for your stepfather, Casey. They're going to use a drone on Mars.
Yeah, it's coming. It's happening. Soon. It's
I didn't exciting. Know this.
Yeah. Oh, what?
I don't pay attention to science news now that we're on Crash Course.
Yeah, the Mars 2020 rover will have a drone on it.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of reasons why we haven't done aircraft on other planets yet. A lot can go wrong. You know, it's just easier to be like sticking around on the ground, rolling around.
Mm-hmm.
You have to land them. And like the quadcopter drone thing required a lot of like miniaturization of accelerometers and like motors, and a lot of different things had to get small and lightweight for quadcopters to be something that was commercially viable. But then you have this other problem on Mars specifically, which is that there's not much air.
Mm,
and so aircraft work by, you know, sort of working around air pressure. And when you have fewer molecules to push against, you can't lift yourself. So there's a vote in favor on Mars, though, as well, which is that it has like 1/3 of the gravity of Earth. So you've got that is a good thing. It's easier to get off the ground because everything's significantly lighter. But it's harder because air pressure is like 1% of Earth. There's just not a lot of molecules to push against. But they've figured that out, and they've tested it in a vacuum chamber, and it does fly. And it will mostly be a proof of concept device. The one that they've got on the 2020 rover, fingers crossed. But it will also be there to like scout ahead to see like higher resolution pictures of where the rover might go to make sure that it's not going to run into anything that it doesn't like.
Is it all that useful when you have satellites?
Yeah, you can definitely get better resolution pictures from a drone than you can from a satellite.
Okay.
In the future, they want to do like fly over here, grab a rock that the rover won't be able to get to, and we think is interesting, and bring it back.
Mm.
Yeah. Be like, hey, look at this other rock from a farther away.
I wanted to have a swarm of drones.
Yeah, a lot of little ones.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So they can work together to pick up rocks.
It's just this little rover that's like rolling around, and it's got it's these like, drones taking off and coming
What are they
back.
Doing? I don't care.
It doesn't matter.
I don't care about the science. I just want there to be a swarm of drones. Yeah, that's pretty much how I feel.
Marco asks, Dear Hank and Tangents, do you get lighter every time you fart? Thanks, Marco, for the question.
Okay.
It has to be yes.
Farts have volume farts? Is not consequential,
but they also have a mass.
They also have a mass.
Mass.
Yeah.
If you fart a vacuum, you definitely don't lose. If you farted pure vacuum, big problem.
Fart into your vacuum. Can you store your fart in your vacuum?
You can store your fart in a jar.
Stefan is confused about how vacuums work.
Yeah.
Like into an air compressor, then you can store.
All right.
But not into a vacuum, which just scrubs it and immediately pushes it back out. But yes, do fart into an air compressor.
Okay.
And then when it comes out, there'll be some fart in there. Two, so if you get lighter, mass doesn't matter either. So you definitely become less massive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But if the fart air is the same density as the air, then you don't get lighter?
Because that's like light is weight, which is the gravity pulling down on everything that is you. And
right.
So if you replace the fart air with a gas of equal density.
So if I farted helium, I would become heavier when I farted. All I know is that if I farted helium, I would become heavier when I farted.
Mm. So we fart a sulfur dioxide?
We fart a bunch of different stuff.
Methane.
So hydrogen sulfide is one of the things. We fart methane. But mostly we fart like nitrogen and oxygen because a lot of our farts are just swallowed air.
Then you have more swallowed air.
I don't know, but I feel like there's less overall density, like the density of your whole body has slightly gone down.
But you breathe in when you fart. So like maybe there's like a fraction
of a second.
I don't
inhale when I fart. Are you a monster?
That sounds very does it.
That's like eating a hot dog while you poop.
Stefan stops breathing every time he farts because he thinks it's gross to breathe and fart at the same time. Write it down, put it on a pillow. It's immortalized in podcast.
Have you not eaten on the toilet?
No, I have.
Because I have also eaten on the
just
toilet.
Just for clarity. Yeah.
And in the shower.
I eat just ramen noodles.
No.
The messiest possible food.
Why?
On the toilet.
There's so much stuff floating around in a bathroom. I don't bring anything in the bathroom.
I bring like my morning breakfast is usually like a nutrition shake thing, like Kirkland Signature brand.
Is the top open or closed?
Well, I like shake it and then I put it to my mouth really fast.
So you know it's wrong what you're doing.
I know that there's a probability that there's bacteria in there, but
a higher probability.
But there's also bacteria all around
there's
my
bacteria
house.
Everywhere.
Breathing in air. Mm. Do you hold your breath in the bathroom?
No, I don't think so.
I sometimes do.
Only while he's farting.
Yeah,
but it's like sticky. It's like wet. Food's wet. So there's going to be poopies in it.
Food's wet. It is true. Wetness does matter.
Yeah, yeah.
You should always dry your hands after washing them because if you touch wet hands to something, it's just like, oh, yeah. Oh, everything sticks to
so
that.
So you can eat dry cereal in the bathroom, Sarah. You can't drink protein shakes anymore.
Look, my big wet mouth is also in the bathroom.
Mm. Yeah, keep it closed the whole time. You can hook up an IV and go in the bathroom for your breakfast.
Lord. I have done a little bit of research, and methane, the average human fart, not every human fart, some people have different gut bacteria, contains methane. And methane is more dense than air, so you do get lighter when you fart. This next question comes from Sam. Is this you?
No, it's not. I got confused about it, too. I thought that it's labeled that was one for me.
Sam says, Dear Hank and Tangents, I'm a third-year college student living in the dorms. My roommate is really into heavy metal, and recently he put up a poster on our front door of the guitarist of his favorite band. I'm not really fond of the picture. I'm not into metal. He wants to keep the picture up for the rest of the school year, and I know it represents something important to him. But at the same time, I don't want to come home every night to a door celebrating a guy I don't know anything about and care nothing for. What would be the best compromise in this scenario, Pumpkins and Penguins, Sam? I wish you told us who this guitarist man was.
Yeah, me too. Like, is this a nude picture of this guitarist?
I think it's got clothes. It probably would have been mentioned if it was a nudie picture.
But if it's like, metal, well, it could be like somebody in a creepy costume.
Yeah, probably creepy.
Do you think it's like a reasonably sized picture or a life-size cardboard
just cutout? Like, yeah, this is like a full door.
Yeah. Is there space left on the door?
Yeah, that was my first thought is like, can I put up my own poster of like something that means something to me and I'll just look at that when I come home at night.
Juxtapose it. Put up of My Little Pony. Put up
Harry
Rainbow
Potter.
Dash.
Yeah, if it's a big poster, it's taking up the whole door. I think you're within your rights to say, hey, it's my door too, buddy.
Yeah.
Get a different poster, maybe one that you know he won't like.
Yeah, we have a bumper sticker here at Dear Hank and John that says, there is a diversity of beliefs among the people who drive this car.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes you want to put a bumper sticker on a shared car, but you have to get the people to agree. So if somebody sticks
John
a bumper
merch.
Sticker on your car that you don't agree with, you have to get that Dear Hank and John merch.
Right.
So you get that sticker, put it on the door, but X out the thing and then write, live
musical.
In the storm room. There's a variety of opinions re-heavy metal guitarists among the people who live in the storm room.
There's also the inside of the door.
Well, yeah, but nobody can see that. And people are going to pass by and think, the person in there likes My Little Pony and metal. And maybe you don't want them to think that.
Yeah, what is the question? Is it you are not into metal, and so you don't want to be represented by that? Mm-hmm. And so you want to represent your door that represents you? Or do you just not like looking at it? Because then you could just like avert your eyes every time you go back to your room.
Yeah.
Close your eyes as you open the door.
The great thing about living in a dorm room is that it's definitionally impermanent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If this was a lifelong commitment you'd made to this poster, then I would definitely be like, we need to have this conversation.
Yeah.
But if it's like two semesters.
Yeah. And I think if there's nothing like fundamentally distasteful about the band being represented or something like that.
If you do
really
a little bit of research and you find out that it's Slipknot, then just like, you got to be like, this is not okay. Everybody sure. except Sari enjoyed that joke.
Yeah, Sari, everyone
not as far from the worst band that you could pick to put a poster up of, but all right.
They just pee on things more than they should.
Yeah.
And metal bands pee on things?
Slipknot does. Other ones do too?
I think there's a lot of peeing happening in the metal community.
I mean, there's a lot of peeing happening for all of us.
Yeah.
Which reminds me that this podcast is brought to you by metal musicians peeing on things. Slipknot loves to pee.
This podcast is also brought to you by Sari's toilet shake or whatever.
that's what they call it. The Kirkland toilet shake.
Yeah, the toilet smoothie. You gotta be sitting on the toilet or else it won't let you open it. Only eat it on the toilet.
This podcast is also brought to you by My Big Wet Mouth, also known as the poop sponge.
Come on.
This podcast is also brought to you by leg washing.
So listen, y'all, you've heard me tell a lot of stories about Policy Genius over the years. Policy Genius, just to be clear, is not an insurance company. It's a marketplace that helps people find and buy insurance. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. So I know we talk a lot about death on this podcast, and then we use that talk about death to talk about Policy Genius. But for serious, you probably need life insurance, and Policy Genius is a great place to get it. Check life insurance off your to-do list in no time with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com or click the link in the description to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. Policy Genius, because you will leave behind people who love and need you. That's not their tagline, but, you know, I like it.
Half the people in this room do it.
All right. Another science question for the team. This is from Alyssa, who asks, "Dear Hank and Tangents, why do humans live so much longer than dogs? And why do sea turtles live so much longer than humans? And why do animals live for different amounts of time? Memento mori, Alyssa." Boy.
Those telomeres.
Is
it telomeres?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I did it.
Some people say telomeres. I've always heard telomeres.
Yeah. Too.
So what that? It's on DNA, right?
Yeah, that's like the caps of the chromosomes. And every time the chromosomes divide, they get slightly shorter. And as they get shorter, then you get more mutations happening in the DNA.
It's a replication process that they get shorter. Like, replication is part of division. But okay. The thing specifically is like the way that the machinery clamps onto the DNA and starts creating the duplicated strand. It inherently cannot duplicate the very, very end of it because that's where, like, the initial protein latches on.
Oh.
Huh. And so you, like, get a slightly shorter strand every time as you go back and forth.
So why has a turtle ended up with so much better an ability to do this or whatever?
There's sort of the evolutionary reason, and then there's the sort of mechanistic reason. So evolutionarily, if you basically just say you can't breed until you reach a certain age, like, there's some pressure that means, like, it's better for there to be a long period before something reaches sexual maturity and then a long period of sexual maturity, then you, like, evolution pressures for a longer lifespan. And there are all kinds of things that can push for a longer lifespan. So if you, like, took a dog and you said, we will never breed these dogs before they reach the age of 10, then over the course of many generations, the dogs would live longer.
Whoa.
Because the ones who died early would never breed.
Is that why people's life expectancy goes up?
No.
Oh, okay.
And then there are the mechanistic reasons, which is like, okay, so that's why evolution pressured for things to live longer, but what actually changed to make them live longer?
Okay.
And there are a bunch of things that seem to change to make things live longer, but they're all weirdly interconnected. And if you just change one thing, you end up with a bunch of weird, bad side effects. So if you say, like, oh, they have more of this enzyme, so give people more of that enzyme, and it's like, oh, well, now their telomeres are staying longer for longer, but also they get way more cancer.
Is there also, like, a metabolic component too?
Yeah.
Because I feel like there's like those really slow living sharks.
Those slow sharks, those Greenland sharks.
Turtles are slow.
Or people talk about the Greenland sharks maybe live long and the coldness of the ocean has something to do with it.
Right. Well, they're slow, it's cold.
They're refrigerated.
Yeah. And that, like, that seems to have something to do with metabolism and just like the more metabolism there is. God, those Greenland sharks are cool. In our sharks episode, we talked about Greenland sharks on Tangents and how they hunt. Which is that
don't spoil
how they can eat. I won't spoil it. I'll just tell you. They eat seals, but they never travel more than like 1 mile per hour. So how do they do it? Listen to SciShow Tangents to find out. And now, everyone, it's time for the all-important news from Mars and AFC Wimbledon. I've heard that Sarah actually went and got AFC Wimbledon news because you're not busy. Got plenty of free time.
I got so much time.
But in news from Mars, I will tell you more about the Mars 2020 rover, which is getting ready to make its journey. So it's going through some initial tests, getting ready for launch. At the end of August, engineers took the rover and spun it around really fast, but not to test gravity, which is what my first thought was, but to find its center of gravity.
Oh, cool.
So they didn't like put it at the outside of a centrifuge. They just like put it here and they spun it around.
They didn't know.
They could probably model it pretty accurately, but you can't model it as accurately as real life.
Huh, right. Mm-hmm.
So they spun it around to find its center of gravity, which is very important for how you're going to position it inside of its spacecraft and also while doing like its descent calculations to make sure everything goes according to plan. One of the engineers at JPL compared the process to how you balance a new tire when you rotate it back and forth to figure out how the tire is balanced, and you put weights on the tire rim to get the balance right for your car. In this case, instead of a tire, it's a 2,300-pound Mars rover, and the engineers applied 9 tungsten weights for a total of 44 pounds to get the center of gravity just right.
Wow, that's cool.
Spin that boy and then take him to Mars with his little quadcopter.
So it's getting to Mars in 2020. It's not launching in 2020.
I think it's launching in 2020 and getting to Mars.
Oh, it's doing both.
But I don't know. It may get to Mars in 2021, but it's definitely launching in 2020.
Okay.
Okay. I literally Googled AFC Wimbledon and then found something that was less than 2 days old.
Yay!
To find it.
That sounds great.
Apparently, they're bad.
Yeah.
I didn't know this. The people at this company just talk about AFC Wimbledon as a known quantity, and John talks about it as a known quantity, but I didn't know that they were actually like bad.
They're not all like they're not. No, it's not that they're bad.
They're in a tough league.
They are in a harder league than they used to. So they were very good in their previous league, and then they moved up to the hard league, and now they are. They're at the bottom of it.
I guess I say this and people are going to come at me. I was also a bad at athlete thing.
But they're good athletes.
Yeah, but they're good. Okay, so they're better than me. I apologize to AFC Wimbledon.
Yeah, but no, they're doing very badly.
They're doing very badly, but they just won.
They did.
They won their first victory. The other 11 games of this season were lost or tied.
Uh-huh. You would not be a good sports commentator.
She's doing
it. I can do like the sports intro news sound. But anyway.
So much negativity.
Is that what that was?
Yeah.
Sports time with Sari.
Yeah.
This team is so bad.
Go team. Okay, I can do it more positively if you want.
Yeah, no, it's fine. What
AFC Wimbledon is great. They're trying their best this season. And after a long stretch of not that great, they won.
It did.
They had a strong first half. It was 3-0. Then it was a nerve-wracking second half, apparently, because the other team scored 2.
Ooh.
But they still won. 3-2.
Do they have a chance?
It's not looking good.
It's not looking good.
They're below the dotted line, which I assume is the relegation line. But they're only one below the dotted line. Oh. They're 21.
Yes. Okay. The scarier thing, though, is that Southend, who started the season at negative 12 points, is now up to 4.
Whoa.
So they're going to get out of that zone. So they started at a negative because of something bad happened.
Oh, they got like penalized.
Yeah.
I love that. Sports accountability.
They're probably going to move out of the relegation zone, and then AFC Wimbledon will be deeper in there.
Oof.
Or I think
they're going to pull it out.
Or they're
going to
keep going. Yeah. This could be the start.
Yeah. I mean, the team that they beat is one of the worst teams in the league.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So they're only 2 things ahead of them.
Well, that means they could beat Tranmere. They could beat Bolton.
They could.
According to this
Bolton
ranking.
Also started with negative 12 points.
Ooh,
oh.
It's not looking good then.
But they could. This is an underdog. Just like Stefan could rise above us in Hank Bucks.
Yeah, but he probably won't.
Oh.
Now who's being negative?
Who's number 1 on the list?
Ipswich Town.
I'm Ipswich Town, baby.
They got 4 green check marks in the last 5.
I have 5 green check marks in the last 4. So.
Whoa.
Yeah. I got a bonus one.
This doesn't seem very fair at all. We need to not have him be in charge of the points. All right, guys. Thanks for making a podcast with me.
Thank you. It was very fun. Yeah,
what a good time. If you want to hear more from us, we're available at SciShow Tangents, which you could just search for on your podcast app.
It's probably at the bottom of the thing on Dear Hank and John. It says they also subscribe to SciShow Tangents.
If you go into the description.
Mm-hmm. in the iTunes
Maybe
store.
That would work.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
I think it would.
Deering and John is a co-production of Complexly and WNYC Studios. This podcast is edited by Joseph Tuna Medish, who's also sitting in the room this time. He got to be our peanut gallery. He laughed at jokes. Very encouraging. And it's produced by Rosianne Hals-Rojas and Sheridan Gibson. Our head of community and communications is Victoria Bongiorno. The music you're hearing now and at the beginning of the podcast is by the great Gunnarola. And as they say in our hometown,
don't forget to be awesome.
But one more thing. You can ship coconuts in the mail.
Is that legal?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, I keep saying that fact and I keep editing it out of episodes.
Oh.